world of deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. It's the David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Wednesday, the 4th of March, year of our Lord, 2026. Well, we're going to take a look today at the obsession of government at every level to regulate and turn into a privilege or a crime, things that we do on an ordinary basis. And this is coming out of California. I know there's not a lot of Republicans in California. This is mostly a Democrat thing. But this went through both houses of the legislature unanimously. No one, not even a Republican anywhere, voted against this. And it shows us yet again how they're weaponizing just even ordinary computers, let alone artificial intelligence. There's a huge blowback now against OpenAI and Sam Altman because they will cross those red lines. They will do mass surveillance for the Pentagon. They will use autonomous killer robots, use their software for that. And people are pushing back against that. We're going to take a look at the lies of war. You know, the first casualty of truth, war is truth. And we have an abundance of lies that are being fed out by both sides. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Well, let's begin with the hubris, the boasting, and the lies about war. And let's start with Trump. Trump is saying the U.S. has virtually unlimited supply of stockpiles of weapons. He's talking about these anti-missile things. Folks, if you remember, a few days before this all happened, I was telling you what the chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff said, General Dan Cain. And it was put out by J.D. Vance, put out also by Marco Rubio, both of them trying to either straddle the fence or pull back a little bit from some of this stuff because of the political baggage that is going to haunt them and may be a career ender for them as well. And what he was saying was that Dan Cain was very clear about the fact that we were low on ammo and allies. He said we have used so many of these missiles for Israel and for Ukraine, you know, we don't have that many for ourselves. And it's going to be a real issue for this operation because we don't have that many. So then Trump comes out and says just the opposite. Because he has no trouble lying to your face. No matter how absurd the lie, Trump and his regime, like people like War Pete, they are perfectly up to the task of looking you right in the eye and telling you an absurd lie that everybody knows is not true. So Trump said yesterday that the U.S., has virtually unlimited supply of weapons. Let's talk about that. The production rate, they said, of the Iranian government in terms of these missiles is about 100 a day, a month, about 100 a month. The production rate of the anti-missiles is about 3 per month. That would be a pretty big problem right away if it was a one-to-one correspondence, but it's not. So I said many times as well, when you look at these anti-missile defense systems, it's very different than the usual defender-attacker ratio. Usually the advantage is with the defender. And you need to have superior forces and numbers as the attacker. It's the other way around when you are trying to shoot down these missiles. It generally takes 2 to 3 of these anti-missile missiles to take down one of the missiles. So they would need to have production of 200 or 300 of these things a month. Instead, they've got 6 to 7. They're about anywhere from 33 to 43 times less than what they actually need. They'd have to up their production 33 to 43 times. But that doesn't stop Trump from looking at you and looking right at the camera and lying to your face, just like we had it was the guy that did the PCR test. Kerry Mullis said about Anthony Fauci. He said, I think I'll look you right in the eye in the camera, and he'll lie straight to the camera. Well, so will Trump. I wonder why they ever wound up partnering, you think? Anyway, he says, our medium and upper medium grade have never been higher or better. He said, we have a virtually unlimited supply of these weapons. Our wars can be fought forever. Didn't he just tell us this wasn't going to be a forever war? Again, the taco thing. Yeah, Trump is always changing orders, I say, not chickening out, but he's always changing orders. He's also always capricious and odious in what he says. That's what I think TACO stands for. And so Trump is bragging about the virtually unlimited supply of these weapons. And by the way, it's actually even worse, perhaps, than what we think in terms of the missiles that are being produced. It's hard to tell when you look at these videos of things out there. And I haven't shown very many of these. And you can kind of take most of them with a grain of salt. However, I've noticed that people are going in, and you can see in the comments, some people will debunk it and say, well, that's an old picture. That was some place in Turkey that got bombed 5 years ago or something like that. Somebody has put that up and said, this is Jerusalem today. And so you got some debugging that's going on with people, and you have some people are asking, hey, Grok, is this for real? And people are making fun of that. But actually, Grok is pretty sharp in terms of being able to see some kind of a watermark that's there or identifying some of the hallmarks of artificial intelligence. I'm going to say it's a lot better at spotting that stuff than I am. I hate to say that we want to turn over some decisions like that to it. So I just haven't used that stuff too much. But this purports to be an attack on Jerusalem that was widely published on X. And I didn't see anybody making a case that this wasn't real. I saw a lot of people making the case that it was real. Grok made the case that it was real as well. Massive amount of missiles coming in. And the comments were that there appears to be some kind of an Iranian missile that has 80 sub-missile clusters in it, some kind of a sub-cluster, right? And so to multiply that out by 80. That disadvantage that we have in terms of numerics that are there. Wars can be fought forever, said Trump. Yeah, we've noticed. As a matter of fact, he campaigned and promised that he wouldn't do that. Now he's boasting that he can do that. And we're better than other countries. We have the finest arms. We have a good supply at the higher end, but it's not where we want to be. And so then he blamed Biden for the stockpile not being where it should be. He said, Sleepy Joe spent all this time and all of our country's money giving everything to P.T. Barnum, Zelensky of Ukraine. And while he gave so much of the super high-end stuff away for free, he didn't bother to replace it, he said. So the U.S. is stocked and we're ready to win big, was his conclusion. So we can't be defeated. But by the way, if we are, it'll be Biden's fault. You know that, right? And, you know, he does deserve the blame for a lot of this stuff. Well, Joe McGregor had this to say.
China and Russia are sitting on the sidelines monitoring everything. They're in close touch with the government. They're providing satellite intelligence, which accounts for some of the tremendous successes, particularly in Israel and on our U.S. bases. All of our bases have been destroyed. Our harbor installations are destroyed. We're actually having to fall back on India and Indian ports, which are less than ideal. That's what the Navy says. And I think Iran, much to our disappointment, is faring very, very well.
Well, and the other part of this is the genius plan that was introduced yesterday by Trump. The United States government, that means you and I, are going to insure all the oil tankers so they'll go through the Strait of Hormuz. How's that going to work out? I mean, they're burning all over the place. It's amazing, and the ships are afraid to go in there. So we're going to tell them, we'll escort you or we'll insure you and all this stuff. To me, I look at it, I'm not a naval expert by far. But it seems to me like that increases the vulnerability for the naval ships that are doing the guarding as well. It puts them in a very difficult position because I don't know relative to the size of ships or anything how large the Strait of Hormuz is, but they call it a strait because it's kind of narrow, especially considering where they usually are able to maneuver. So it puts you between a rock and a hard place, not between Iraq and Iran. And so if you're there having to maneuver in this small area and trying to guard these ships, that puts our naval ships at risk as well, but also puts all of us at risk financially. And so a lot of people are looking at some of these missiles that are coming into Jerusalem and saying, where did this stuff come from? Was this Iranian or was this given by Russia and China? Well, Trump has vowed, in spite of all this, the big one is coming. We're getting ready to unleash something really, really big. So the big wave, he said, hasn't even happened. The big one is coming soon. And Marco Rubio is echoing that as well, I guess, trying to get back into Trump's good graces after the devastating candor of what he had to say the other day in terms of, well, we decided we'd go ahead and do it because Israel was going to do it. You know, so we have to follow them, whatever they're doing. So they dictate the timing. And look, folks, let me just say this. Yes, the Trump administration deserves criticism for being followers of Israel and not doing things in our interest. Absolutely, they deserve criticism. But look, this is they were pushed into this, and we know that they are getting a lot of money from Israel, and they're owned by Israel, as Trump has said, right? He said, you used to own Congress, and rightfully so, but they're not doing what you want to do. Send me. I'll do everything that you want to do. So we know where this is going. However, we also know that the U.S. government is responsible for its own decisions, isn't it? Let's not let Trump off the hook. He wanted this war. I mean, he's done these things. He's done them for Israel. He's done them because he wants to, but he's responsible for his own actions. And so is Marco Rubio. They can't push this off on another country. It's despicable that they are letting another country dictate to them what to do, but it is their decision and they need to own it. And we have seen already that they are pirates, terrorists, starting unjust wars, in other words, wars where we are the aggressor, and then conducting them in a way that is criminal, even if it was a legitimate conflict, executing people who are shipwrecked. I'm disgusted with this terrorist government of Washington. They literally are terrorists. And so now you're saying the big one is coming, and we're going to be doing even more. I've got a Poptosis 22. Says, David was wondering where the false flag was. Well, they're keeping that in reserve to goad a boots-on-the-ground move, I fear. Yeah, you're probably right. It's going to be some kind of a morale builder or something that they use for escalation. Because already, there is a lot of pushback. The American public was not on board with this war, did not want to see this war. And already, there's a political price to pay for this. And so, they're going to, like I said, I should have thought about the fact that Trump always does whatever he wants and then faces the consequences later. He doesn't think about whether or not it's a wise move. He certainly doesn't think about whether or not it's legal or constitutional. He just does it, and then he deals with the lawsuits and the fights after the fact. So, yeah, I believe that it will be coming. So he says, we'll do this as long as it takes to advance those objectives, and we will achieve those objectives. The world will be a safer place when we're done with this operation. That, folks, is the ultimate lie. All of his actions, even the kidnapping of Maduro, immediately raised the threshold of uncertainty. And people saying, okay, well, Trump has done this, so now we can do it as well. The Russian politicians said, well, he has untied our hands. These types of things matter. Precedent Trump. And he's setting precedents internationally, not just bad precedents in our country as well. Wally Rawler says everyone in the government is owned by Israel. Well, that's absolutely true. And so that's a big part of it. They are still, however, responsible for their actions. I've heard people let Trump off the hook so many times because they said, well, in COVID, he was just getting bad advice from people. It's like, bad advice from people who work for him. Bad advice from people that he put in that position or whatever. He's still responsible for it. Just like Harry Truman said, the buck stops here. And it does. Don't let them off the hook either. It's bad enough that they're owned, but they have betrayed the Constitution and Americans as well. On the Iran war, they think you are stupid. This is an article from the American Conservative, and they're absolutely right. Trump thinks Americans are stupid. Yeah, and especially Republicans. I mean, he said that. He said, if I ever run for president, I'll run as a Republican because they're stupid. They'll vote for me. And I talked about, and that's what this article here is talking about, kind of looking at his case for the war with Iran. And he makes a case for the war with Iran, saying, yeah, for 47 years they've been chanting death to America. And they have been angry with us. Well, maybe that has something to do with the fact that not 47 years ago, but 73 years ago, we went to war with them. Think about the fact that for all these regime changes that we have done, one of the first and one of the biggest that we did was Iran in 1953, shortly after World War II. We did that regime change. And we have been reaping the rotten fruit from that for the longest time. We put in this totalitarian guy, they called himself the Shah, which is Persian for king. Put him in, equipped and trained his secret police, the CIA and Mossad did. They equipped and trained the Savak so that he could oppress his own people. And so it was, that was 73 years ago, 1953. And they put up with that for about 36 years. Pretty amazing, before it really blew up and blew back on us. That is a classic case of blowback. It is a classic case of regime change failure. It's one of the very first ones we did. And all of them are failures. Trump's many reasons amounted to really no reason at all. As an intellectually, any intellectually honest observer was left fairly clueless as to what he was talking about. Enter Congress, more specifically the House Foreign Affairs Committee, which posted on X congratulating the president on ending Iran's forever war with the United States. We've been the aggressor attacking Iran for 73 years. Now, we did have that little Iran-Contra affair where the Reagan administration made friends with the Ayatollah for a while so they could get dirty money that they could use to run their secret dirty war against the Contras. They sold them spare equipment for the jets that we had given the totalitarian dictator, the Shah. And you had Bill Casey, Reagan's CIA campaign manager, who personally went to Iran and got them to agree they would not release the hostages until Reagan took office. That they would hold them even after Reagan won election. So we have been cooperative with Iran in the past. But again, Trump is sending the forever war that is ending the forever war that Iran has waged against Americans for the last 47 years, wrote the House Foreign Affairs Committee on social media. The problem is very large. It's not limited strictly to Trump, is it? So according to this bipartisan committee, a war has been going on between Iran and the U.S. for nearly half a century. Actually, three quarters of a century. But it was on our side. We are the aggressor. Trump's actions over the weekend were merely a decisive and strong president finally putting an end to it. And he scoffs, as you should as well. The U.S. began this ongoing war by pursuing Iran regime change way back in 1953. Trump just started a war with Iran in which there will be life and death, political consequences, in which little thought seems to have been given. This is a new regime change war of choice, which most Americans did not want. It was started by Trump, and it will end only God knows how, right? Well, as Trump is bombing Iran, we need to reckon with the American war machine, writes Freethought Project. And again, if you want a handle on this, just look at how unhinged Lindsey Graham is. Every day he wants to have another war.
Lindsey Graham is now calling for the U.S. to start bombing Lebanon in response to the Hezbollah IDF action.
Lindsey hasn't seen a fist fight he hasn't wanted to turn into a bombing raid, so I just take it with a grain of salt, dude. Yes, ma'am.
He wants to go after Cuba. He's got a long list of people he wants to kill. It's absolutely amazing the hate that oozes out of this guy, Lindsey Graham. That's Tim Burchett, congressman from Tennessee, just waving it off. Yeah, he doesn't see... If he sees a fist fight in a parking lot, he wants to turn it into a bombing raid. That's a good put down. It's also not accurate to say that Israel is dragging the U.S. into a war against its choosing. Reporting has shown that these two nuclear powers were in lockstep on their planning of this attack. So in order to stop this violence, we need to really contend with how it started. And the U.S. is hardly a victim here. We can start, of course, by demanding that Congress immediately pass a War Powers Resolution to put an end to this destructive assault. We can lift up the call being made by some groups to impeach not only Trump, but every single member of his cabinet who had a hand in making this unjust and illegal war possible. Let me tell you something. That's not going to happen. The Democrats secretly want this war as well. They also take money from Israel. But just take a look at why would they impeach Trump? This guy is an albatross around the GOP. They know it. He's going to pull them down like Jimmy Carter pulled the Democrats down. It's just obvious. If they impeach him and remove him, then the Republicans get to put in J.D. Vance, who I don't like J.D. Vance. I don't like his technocracy. I don't like the control that Peter Thiel has over him. But he is wiser and more moderate in the way that he speaks and the things that he, the way he comes across. He's a lot more controlled than Donald Trump is. They don't want to have that situation in there. So they will get control of the Congress in this next election, and they will do some kind of an impeachment thing, but they won't take it all the way to the end because they don't want to remove Trump. They want to use it for political capital. They want to use it to win elections up and down, and I don't want to see the Democrats winning elections up and down, especially at the state and local level. But that's kind of where we are right now, between two awful and evil choices. But when you look at what happened with all this, this is why I keep going back to what happened in 2020, when Trump went to war with the American people for a globalist agenda. I mean, he outed himself right there as being a dyed-in-the-wool World Economic Forum globalist in terms of his goals, in terms of his actions, in terms of everything that he did. Locking us down, taking our jobs, getting us, trying to move the Overton window towards universal basic income. Every single aspect of what he did with that was betrayal. And so when I look at this, and a lot of what a lot of people are saying, it's almost like this is the first time they've noticed. It was so clear, and still is, especially, it should be even more clear now if you have lost the spell that he cast over the MAGA people. Our elected officials need to publicly explain why they hemmed and hawed over a War Powers Resolution before these attacks occurred, despite the obvious military buildup. That's right. I think it's only Thomas Massie who tried to get that passed and try to preemptively stop this preemptive attack. And he couldn't get other people, other Republicans, to sign on with him. They did have this come up, and they shut it down. We must demand that every member of Congress who voted to increase our military budget to nearly $1 trillion account for their choices. And we have to push those members who have personal investments in the military machine to the tune of tens of millions of dollars and even further. They need to explain their conflicts of interest and why they continue to profit off of this death and destruction. Lawmakers who take money from groups like AIPAC that are relishing in this war, especially. And when you look at the warfare, the welfare state, it's funny to me how Republicans can get rightfully upset about welfare fraud. They seem to not care at all about warfare fraud. You know, what about all these, this massive fraud and waste that we see in military systems and procurement? How about the trillions of dollars that went missing right before 9/11? And then they flew the missile right into the window of the office that was doing the investigation. What about that? Well, the White House is acting like it's losing the Iran narrative, writes Mediaite. They said 77% of Republicans approve of the operation. And of self-identified MAGA voters are nearly 50 points more likely than non-MAGA Republicans to trust Trump on the use of force in Iran. Yeah. The doublethink is strong. The force is strong with this one. So why is the Republican, why is the White House acting like it's losing the narrative? Because the polling isn't the problem, but their narrative is. Well, Rubio handed them the problem when he went to Congress and talked to the gang of eight, the high ranking officials, Democrat and Republican in the House and in the Senate, he said Israel was going to act, so the U.S. had to strike first to reduce casualties. Paired with his argument about Israel's missile production outpacing American interceptor capacity, I'm sorry, not Israel, but Iran, roughly 100 ballistic missiles produced per month against six or seven interceptors. That's what I said up at the front. The those numbers are coming from Rubio. So if those are the public numbers, imagine what the real numbers are like. It's like anything else. Were they talking about inflation, unemployment? Or you're talking about military strength? They're always going to lie to you about this stuff. So again, if they are making 100 of these missiles and we need two or three interceptors per missile, we need 200 or 300 of these things a month just to break even. But we're producing 6 to 7, not 200 or 300. So the White House recognized the hazard almost immediately. What followed wasn't routine communications. It was damage control with a specific target. Matt Walsh had made comments on social media, and Caroline Leavitt didn't respond at the podium. Instead, she sent the response directly to him on social media, which is really, as they point out here, an admission of concern and of weakness. Matt Walsh had written that the administration's messaging was, to put it mildly, confused. Now, that is very mild, I think. She replied directly to him, directly on social media. Not with a talking point, but with an enumerated list of objectives and maximalist language about enemy deaths and outcomes. That is not how you respond to a manageable complaint. That's how you respond when you think a frame is about to set inside your own coalition, and you need to stop it before it does. When you flood the zone with, quote, everyone serious supports this and it is morally overdue, when that's your response, you're not communicating confidence. You're trying to drown ambiguity before it hardens. Trump himself made the anxiety visible on Tuesday. Asked whether Israel had forced his hand, he didn't dismiss the question, but he flipped it. No, I might have forced their hand, he said. If anything, I forced Israel's hand. What does that remind you of? It reminds me of John Lovett when he used to do The Liar on Saturday Night Live. If anything, I think I forced. Yeah, that's it. That's the ticket. I forced their hand. I told that to my wife, Morgan Fairchild, right? Yeah, that's it. That's it. That's the ticket.
It's so funny you would ask that. It's just so funny you would ask that.
Yeah, it's so they said, that's a remarkable thing for a sitting president to say in the middle of an active military operation. Who's leading whom is a question that has gotten loud enough that Trump felt compelled to personally reverse its polarity. Presidents who are winning the argument don't do that. And the reason the White House is nervous isn't because of Tucker Carlson and Megyn Kelly and Matt Walsh. They are the infrastructure of the very media ecosystem the Trump movement built. And they are now running a sustained counter-narrative that the administration clearly believes has traction, regardless of what any crosstab says, talking about polling. And so Trump is very upset with Tucker Carlson, Megyn Kelly. Oh, they're not MAGA. I am MAGA. Yeah, you're not America. I am America. And don't you ever forget it. I'm going to come after you with the Department of Justice. The polling says that the base is holding. And yet, again, Republican voters alone are not going to win this any elections for them. That's the key thing. Their audiences may not defect in any traditional sense, but sustained elite criticism within a coalition can erode enthusiasm, depress turnout margins, and shift donor energy in ways that don't show up in approval polls until it's too late. Well, I just say, when we look at this and the Democrats get a chance to impeach him, I hope they at least bring good charges against him. That was the problem with the impeachment stuff in 2020 and so forth, because the things that they were coming up with were not real concerns, not real issues, not real crimes. And it was, it gave him the aura of a victim. He's not a victim. And so they need to pick the real issues. And there is a target-rich environment of things to impeach Donald Trump for in just this first year. I've never seen anybody in my lifetime who's had such utter contempt for the rule of law, the Constitution, and basic morality as Donald Trump. I hope they get him, but like I said before, you know they're not. They don't want to push him out of office. They don't want J.D. Vance in there. And, of course, they have to, unless there's a big change in the Senate, even if the House were to impeach him, the Senate is not going to actually convict him on that. He's a man without convictions, we could say, in every sense of the word. Levitt directly replying to Walsh, Trump personally flipping the "I forced them" framing. Those moves signal to the broader media ecosystem that this line of criticism has enough bite to warrant presidential attention, and you don't send the Secretary of State, Rubio, back to try to do damage control if something's not hurting you. And this is what he did. Here's a clip. You'll hear him, the original thing that he said, and then you'll hear him going back and trying to do damage control and trying to walk this back.
Yesterday, you told us that Israel was going to strike Iran and that that's why we needed to get involved. Today, the president said that Iran was going to get...
Yeah, your statement is false. So that's not what he... I was asked very specifically. Were you there yesterday?
Yes, I asked the question.
They think you're stupid.
The made the very wise decision.
This is yesterday.
It was going to be an Israeli action. We knew that that would precipitate an attack against American forces. And we knew that if we didn't preemptively go after them before they launched those attacks, we would suffer higher casualties and perhaps even higher those killed. And then we would all be here answering questions about why we knew that and didn't act.
Yeah, okay, so you heard him try to walk that back. Were you here? I didn't say that. That's absolutely false. This is the thing that bothers me, I guess, maybe more than anything else about the Trump administration. Not only do they think you're stupid, they're stupid. They're not just dishonest liars. They are so stupid that they don't realize that people are going to put those two clips next to each other. Just like Christine Ohm when she said, yeah, the agents were under attack. They were stuck in the snow, and these people were trying to hit them with their cars. Just makes up the story. And Trump did the same thing. And when he was in the Oval Office and being interviewed by the New York Times, and they questioned him about the situation there, and he said, oh, this is what happened, blah, blah, blah. No, that's not what happened. And he goes, get the tape. Let's show them. I'll show them what this is. He'd obviously never even bothered to look at the tape. And when he saw the tape, he didn't have anything to say. He goes, and then he changed the subject to something completely different. They just, Christine Ohm, Donald Trump, Marco Rubio, they tell you that what you have seen with your own eyes, even if it's them talking, they tell you that that's not what happened. And so then we have Tucker Carlson, who made an interesting statement. He said that authorities in Saudi Arabia and Qatar had arrested Israeli Mossad agents planning bombings in those countries. And then Qatar's foreign ministry came back and pushed back against that and said that didn't happen. Tucker Carlson said, why would the Israelis be committing bombings in Gulf countries, which are also being attacked by Iran? Aren't they on the same side? Here's that clip.
Hasn't been reported, but it's a fact that last night in Qatar and Saudi Arabia, authorities arrested Mossad agents planning on committing bombings in those countries. Why would the Israelis be committing bombings in two Gulf countries, which are also being attacked by Iran? Aren't they on the same side? No! Israel wants to hurt Iran and Qatar and UAE and Saudi and Bahrain and Oman and Kuwait. And they've succeeded. And the third thing you would have to do if you wanted true control over the region is get the U.S. out of the Middle East. And this war is designed to do it because the Israelis know that there is no appetite whatsoever for casualties and that this would cause a political crisis in the United States and that it would most critically convince our Arab allies that the United States is a bad ally. A Saudi Aramco facility went up last night. The Iranians said they didn't do it. Why would they say they didn't do it? What possible Israel did it? Why wouldn't they? Because if you think about it, scaring our other allies in the region letting them know that they can get attacked and the U.S. will not defend you. You put up with all this crap for decades because you got American troops on your soil and your population doesn't like it, but you do it anyway because you've been told if there was ever a problem, the U.S. will come rescue you. Well, guess what we just learned? The U.S. is not coming to rescue you.
Guess what maybe you just learned? Tucker Carlson has controlled opposition and he cannot be trusted, folks. He cannot be trusted. I've watched this guy work for the CIA and the government to tamp down any obvious video. I mean, talk about somebody being stupid that they know that there's video stuff. He wouldn't let architects and engineers show the video of the building collapsing so they could talk about it. He's like, I'm not showing that video. And he would say things like, you know, why are these crazy conspiracy theorists always want to talk about the melting point of steel and the temperature of airplane fuel and all these other things? Well, because they matter and you should know they matter. You're not stupid. Tucker is not stupid. He is dishonest. He has said things like, well, you can't talk about Building 7. You can't ask questions like that or you'll get fired. That's probably the most honest thing the guy has ever said. And he told you right there that he was lying for the man. He was lying for the establishment. He was lying for the CIA. And so when you look at COVID, same situation. He was more than happy to take the big checks from Fox News and deceive people. He might do an occasional eye roll as to what they're saying about something, but he wasn't going to attack it head on. He wasn't going to tell you the truth. Be careful with Tucker. I agree with him on a lot of different issues, and I disagree with him on some issues. But do not trust him at all. He's got some interesting guests because he's got a big name show, but do not trust this guy. So some people point out in Qatar, it's a crime to publish fake news like Tucker Carlson just did. It can land a person a 5-year prison sentence or a fine that amounts to about $28,000. Of course, that would mean nothing to Tucker Carlson. It'll be interesting to see what Qatar does, given that Tucker just bought a home there. Maybe they confiscate the home, huh? Tucker is too much of a coward to directly blame Trump for getting America involved in a war in Iran. So he fabricated a story so insane that it triggered a minor diplomatic incident in which Qatar had to come forward and say, yeah, that's not true. Keep that in mind. And then we've got Pentagon Pete, War Pete, as I call him, who these casualties we're now learning were from one particular strike. We've had six U.S. service members confirmed dead, many people seriously injured. And it wasn't multiple things that happened. It was one particular incident. The six service members confirmed dead were killed while inside a triple-wide trailer that Pete Hegseth described as, quote, fortified. The trailer, which served as a makeshift operations center, took a direct hit amid Iran's retaliatory strikes in Kuwait just after 9 a.m. local time Sunday. Central Command said 18 troops have also been seriously wounded, while others are suffering minor shrapnel wounds and concussions. Yeah, a fortified trailer, is that right? I'm reminded, at one point I was interviewing with Harris Semiconductor. I wanted to move back to Florida to be closer to my family, and the group I was interviewing with was tracking satellites, and they had they were operating out of a trailer, and and trailers don't do too well with hurricanes or tornadoes. And so what these guys did is a joke. They showed me, they went up on the roof of the trailer, and they wrote, "This is not a trailer." I guess maybe that's the fortification that Pete Hegseth did. They go up there and you write, "This is not a trailer. This is not, these are not the soldiers that you're looking for, Iran." Except that they weren't really protected. You know, you're not really protected in a trailer like that. Anyway, a source told CNN there was no warning of the attack. Not only did the air defense not go off, but there was no air raid siren that went off. It struck in the port of Kuwait. No siren was activated to alert troops to evacuate. There were dozens of people inside the building at the time. The walls of the building were blown outward in the blast, according to pictures of the site, with a fire that was still burning hours afterward. Early on Monday, before the bodies of two servicemen were recovered, Hegseth had said that one projectile made it through air defenses and hit a tactical operation center that was fortified. This guy is going to lie to you about everything. They always do. Trump said, sadly, there'll be more like this before it ends. And I'm afraid he's right about that. Telling you the truth about that. U.S. troops told Trump's attack on Iran is signal fire for Armageddon. Multiple commanders across all branches of the U.S. military have offered a fundamentalist Christian explanation for the attack on Iran. Folks, let's just understand something. This is not Christianity. Christianity is focused on the Lord Jesus Christ as the way. It is not focused on geopolitics. It's not focused on fortune telling. What's the end of the world going to look like? You got these mega churches like Ken Hagee, I think it's John Hagee. John Hagee is his name. And I always meant to go check that out when I thought I could stand seeing it. I was kind of curious. It's in San Antonio. So I thought, well, some Sunday I'm going to go down there and see what this clown is up to. He brings in politicians from Israel, ambassadors and such like that all the time. Flags of Israel behind him. And he literally worships Israel. And he pushes this. Be careful of people who major in trying to focus on Revelation. They completely missed the fact that the letter was titled The Revelation of the Lord Jesus Christ, and they treat it as divination of the end of the world. So they lecture from the book of divinations. They're fortune tellers. They're like the Witch of Endor, and that's what they're focused on. And I don't care if they've got the prophecy right or not. They may have it right. Who knows? But the way they use it is like divination. And what they get focused on in terms of politicians and foreign governments, it is idolatry. And they replace the Lord Jesus Christ with Netanyahu. How disgusting is that? So the commander of the unit said one person urged us to tell our troops that this was all part of God's divine plan, and he specifically referenced numerous citations out of the book of Revelation regarding Armageddon and the imminent return of Jesus Christ. He said that Trump had been anointed by Jesus to light the first signal fire in Iran to cause Armageddon and to mark his return to Earth. He had a big grin on his face when he said all this, which made his message seem even crazier. Well, it is crazy. It is crazy. And again, these people are not following the Lord Jesus Christ. Here's this guy, Hagee, whatever his first name is. Here he is giving you a taste of the kind of insanity. And he's got a big display that he paid a lot of money for. It's up there. Operation Epic Fury is in the background there as he's talking.
Russia must find that oil to be a global force. Israel has that oil, and Russia is already moving into the Middle East. What Israel doesn't have, Donald Trump will control. Secondly, Israel has what Russia must have to be a global force, a warm water port for their navy. Right now, Russia's navy is limited by the icy conditions that surround them. It makes their ships unusable. Ezekiel states that God, quote, in the fury of his wrath, will send a great earthquake in the land of Israel so that the fish of the sea and the birds of the heaven and the beast of the field and all creeping things that creep on the earth shall shake at the presence of God. Mountains.
I wonder if the creepy things includes him. I don't know. Can you imagine going to a church and all you're going to get is a bunch of occult divination, tea leaf reading and all the rest of this stuff? He's not going to tell you about the Lord Jesus Christ, why it was necessary for him to come, what he has done for you. He's not going to tell you about any of that stuff. He's constantly pointing to politics. He's constantly saying, well, this is what's going to happen in the future. It disgusts me, quite frankly. That's not Christianity, not Christianity at all. And then we have, in terms of talking about principles, we have Tulsi Gabbard. This is an op-ed piece from the American Conservative saying she should resign. And the person who writes this says, well, we all know that politics is, as the adage goes, the art of compromise. But it shouldn't involve sacrificing first principles. That's the key thing, right? If you're going to sacrifice that, why would you even put that adjective there as first principles? You got to have some principles that matter, some things that are foundational. And you don't compromise on those things. And so he says, it's difficult for ideologues to try to wield substantial power. Everyone in politics has to determine just how far they're willing to compromise to be productive before violating their own principles or even losing their soul to the process. Well, I would say that you maybe call me an ideologue, but I would say you don't violate your principles. Now, you can compromise on a lot of different things that are there, but not your principles. It's clear that after this weekend and the joint unprovoked American-Israeli attack on Iran, Director of National Intelligence Tulsi Gabbard must choose to resign or forfeit any respectability in the America First Movement. Not just the America First Movement, any respectability at all. And the sad thing is that if you look at this, if she is doing this for political advantage, for career advantage, she would be better off to take a principled stand. Now, she has stood over and over again. He goes through this article talking about how many times during her presidential campaign and when she was elected to Congress, all the different times that she has taken a stand against endless wars, against regime change. And now she's going to be silent? And we have seen this already. She truthfully labeled Clinton, quote, the queen of warmongers, the embodiment of corruption, and the personification of the rot that has sickened the Democratic Party for so long, she said. Well, that's absolutely right. In front of the National Guard Association, Tulsi said, "This is one of the main reasons why I'm committed to doing what all that I can to send Trump back to the White House." I played this clip for you before. Let's see, we don't have it on the board anymore. Can once again serve us as our commander-in-chief because I am confident that his first task will be to do the work to walk us back from the brink of war. We cannot be prosperous unless we are at peace. So she says the right thing. But then when it comes time to do it, she backs off. She says, "We are uniting forces to end foreign wars." During her confirmation hearing, she had to reverse her longtime opposition to key provisions of the FISA Act. Remember that? Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. I said right then, now, it's over, right? You've seen RFK Jr. do the same thing. Violate his principles over and over again. Again, the latest one of those is what he's done with glyphosate. Praising Trump's executive order to not only compel greater production of glyphosate, but also to give them legal immunity from lawsuits as they have paid out tens of billions of dollars. And there have been hundreds of thousands of cases. And the juries have looked at these and you've had scientific studies. We know how harmful this is. And juries have awarded tens of billions of dollars to victims of Monsanto. Trump is going to give them legal immunity from that. And he's going to push for production, greater production of this poison. Again, and then RFK Jr. joins along with them. RFK Jr. knows it's the wrong thing. Tulsi Gabbard knows this is the wrong thing as well. As a matter of fact, even though she caved on FISA, she refused to label Ed Snowden a traitor or to condemn his exposure of mass illegal surveillance by the NSA. So some people held out a little bit of hope for her. Gabbard confirmed in congressional testimony that Iran is, quote, not building a nuclear weapon, and Supreme Leader Khamenei has not authorized the nuclear weapons program that he suspended in 2003. And that's the same conclusion that her predecessors had reached 20 years earlier. But when Trump undermined her influence, including telling reporters flatly, well, I don't care what she says. You know, she's the director of national intelligence. He doesn't care what she has to say. He's going to do whatever he wants. He's going to listen to Israel. Anyway, Gabbard tried to straddle the fence, and she said, Iran can produce a nuclear weapon within weeks or months if they decide to finalize the assembly. A restatement of her initial conclusion, reworded to follow the president. When the U.S. bombed Iran's nuclear facilities last year, There was a public discussion over whether Gabbard was on her way out, and disappointment from her former supporters that she was not making a more forthright stand on the facts. But she caved on that as well. During a security summit in Bahrain, she gave a full-throated condemnation of neoconservative arrogance in foreign policy. She said, "For decades, our foreign policy has been trapped in a counterproductive, endless cycle of regime change or nation building. It was a one-size-fits-all approach of toppling regimes." And we have Ayatollahs in charge of Iran today precisely because of the boneheaded, stupid foreign policy of regime change that we did in 1953 in Iran. That is a failure of some of our first stuff, and it's been failing for 73 years. We've been failing at regime change longer than we've been failing at the drug war. Imagine that. And so what is she to do now? Well, this writer says, talks about how Marjorie Taylor Greene has taken a stand and resigned. And there's also a precedent of Woodrow Wilson and his Secretary of State was William Jennings Bryan, right? And the two of them worked together and effectively until the outbreak of World War I in Europe. William Jennings Bryan insisted on true neutrality, and he favored warning American citizens against traveling on belligerent ships through war zones and prohibiting American passenger ships from carrying ammunition. In the aftermath of the sinking of the Lusitania, where 128 Americans were killed, Woodrow Wilson's provocative response to the German government Bryan submitted his resignation rather than carry out the policy that got us involved in World War I. He wrote, "I cannot join without violating what I deemed to be an obligation to my country. And the issue involved is of such moment that to remain a member of the cabinet would be unfair to you as it would be to the cause which is nearest to my heart, namely the prevention of war. Tulsi Gabbard should follow the same example," writes this author of the American Conservative. "She should resign her post in opposition to the Iran war and publicly condemn Trump's betrayal of the American people and the betrayal of his promise of no more endless wars. She could have a long career of advocacy and public service ahead of her if she has principles." I really don't know what happens if she continues to go down the same course that she has of compromising on fundamental principles. Again, she could be even a formidable candidate for president, because many people, I wouldn't vote for her. It's too much baggage. As a matter of fact, part of the baggage that Tulsi Gabbard has is that she was pro-life before she desired to have a seat in Congress. She had to run as a Democrat, so she changed her positions on that. She's not pro-life when it comes to war either now, is she? And so she does an abortion flip-flop. She does a war and regime change flip-flop. She's just another opportunist, and we should understand that. We're going to take a quick break. Before we do, I've got a couple of comments here. Stealth Patriot, thank you very much for the tip. He says, "I'm not even disappointed in the politicians. They just do what they always do." It's in their nature, right? Lying and stealing. It's the voters that allow them to get away with it. That is the disappointment. I agree. That's the way I felt throughout 2020. It's like, what is the matter with Americans? Why are we doing this? Why are we going in single file in the grocery store in one direction, following all the little arrows on the floor and everything? Just like that, they tell you to do it, and everybody falls in line. I just didn't realize that this country was like that. I was so disappointed in the people of America. I was disappointed in the business owners that would not allow me to sit down and have a meal without a mask. I had to wear the mask and show that I was obedient to the government before they would seat me at one of their tables. I did this multiple times. I wouldn't go to the chains because I knew the chains were just run by employees and they didn't really care about profits. But I thought, well, maybe I've had a small business before, and I know that you don't want to poison your relationship with your customers, and you're looking at the bottom line. You don't want to turn people away. So I thought, well, let me talk to them about this. Twice I called people over and made a scene. And I said, look at this. Everybody is sitting here. Nobody is wearing a mask. And you're telling me that I can't get into this restaurant unless I first put on a mask? I said, what's that about? You know that's not changing anything. And you know that these people, once they're sitting down and they don't have a mask and they're eating, they can stand up and they can walk around the restaurant and they can go to the restroom and all that kind of stuff. And you don't hassle them. Well, you have to do it. And I was like, no, I don't. You know, and finally I said to both of them, I said, and there's something else I don't ever have to do. Ever come back to your restaurant. You're dead to me. I'm never coming back to this place. If you're going to be like that, if you're going to sell the rope that is used to hang you, I'm not coming back. Oh, yeah, I'm disappointed in Americans in a big way. Tornator, thank you for the tip. Apparently that quote where Trump said he'd run as Republican because they're stupid is fake. Well, I don't know. Although the sheep who trust the establishment of either party are stupid by default. That is true. Yeah, I don't know. I guess I've heard that so many times, I just assumed it was true. But I think I agree with that assessment. And I agree with your assessment that the sheep in both of these parties are stupid. We're going to take a quick break, folks, and we will come right back. And again, let's play Shenandoah, because as I look at this war, I sympathize more and more with the character that's played by Jimmy Stewart. I don't want to have anything to do with either side of this thing. And yet, we're going to be caught up in this one way or the other, whether we like it or not.
APS Radio delivers multiple channels of music right to your mobile device. Get the APS Radio app today and listen wherever you go.
Well, as I said at the top of the show, we have the California House and Senate unanimously. And Gavin Newsom has signed it as well, signed into law. Something's going to happen in January next year, which has a troubling contradiction at its heart. And it's also about the desire to turn the use of the internet into a trackable privilege. Of course, to save the children as well is what they put it out there. But it also has an element in it, I believe, that is crony capitalism. Because when you look at this, the effect that it's going to have is going to be to effectively outlaw things like Linux. Who benefits from that? Microsoft. Google, Apple, those people who are putting those things out, they'll benefit from that. Specifically, Microsoft and Apple will benefit with their OS systems. They don't want to have any independent third-party things. And we're seeing this over and over again. You notice how our masters are so upset when we talk to each other, when we can communicate with each other. They've got to control that. And they've got to control any ability that we have to make or create things as well. It's not just you'll own nothing and you'll be happier. But you'll also not create anything either. That's a big part of this. So as California law goes into effect January 2027, and it'll basically kill open source operating systems. California wants to build a surveillance layer into every device that its residents touch. This is from Reclaim the Net. Assembly Bill 1043 signed by Gavin Newsom, taking effect the first day of next year, January the 1st, 2027, requires every operating system provide to collect age information from users at account setup and broadcast that data to app developers through a real-time API. The proposals are particularly dumb for open-source Linux operating systems. Linux exists specifically because some people want computing that doesn't surveil them. I mean, you look at what is happening with Microsoft and how they're embedding their AI into the operating system, and it's being, you know, they've taken the surveillance and the naggy aspect of this even more so. And people are talking about Microslop software, talking about AI. It's very intrusive. And people are trying to get away from that. So they go to Linux. It's not incidental to why the platform exists. It is foundational to why people go to Linux. And there's other operating systems out there as well. Distributions like Arch, Debian, Gentoo have no centralized account infrastructure, and that is by design. Users download ISOs from mirrors, and they modify source code freely, and they run systems that report to nobody. So this Act, AB 1043, treats the entire architecture of open source computing as a compliance problem. They don't want you to have open source computing. They don't want you to have 3D printers. They don't want you to have anything. You'll own nothing and you'll create nothing. And, you know, they will completely control everything we have if we let them. I've just never seen anything like it. Just when I go through the news, it's one thing after the other where the government interjecting themselves into points of our life where they don't have any business, where they don't have any authority being, and where they've never tried to get before. It's exploding. And the thing that is at the very center of it is the technology. And I think that's one of the aspects of the crony capitalism here. You know, they get that control over us through these big companies. And when they keep these big companies as partners, that's the kind of techno-fascism that we're looking at here to create the surveillance state. And understand that it is bipartisan. It passed the House 38-0. And they have some Republicans in the California House. And in the Senate, it passed 76-0. Buffy Wicks is the person who authored the bill. That should tell you something, doesn't it? Buffy. Said that it avoids constitutional concerns by focusing strictly on age assurance and not on content moderation. Now, first of all, before we get into the double talk nonsense that that's all about, just think about the fact that in California, they want your kids to be indoctrinated with all the LGBT stuff. They want them to think that they're in the wrong body. They want them, every aspect of the LGBT stuff they're pushing to them. And they're very adamant that children should be able to mutilate, sterilize their bodies at a very early age. And yet, they want to control what computers they touch. What's that about? And have age restrictions on using a computer in an operating system, but not age restrictions on taking hormones to destroy your body and having a surgeon cut it up. No age restrictions on that. How utterly insane. And as they point out, that statement itself doesn't logically hold up. What is the point of the monitoring of the age? Well, we're just looking for the age. We're not going to do anything to control your content. Well, that's the whole purpose of finding out your age, is to control the content that you're going to be able to get access to. What a thin lie that is. And yet, it passed unanimously. Everybody in state government, every single person in the California House, every single person in the California Senate, and the governor himself, all support this nonsense. So the law actually builds a persistent age signaling infrastructure that is woven into the startup process of your devices. OS providers must maintain what the bill calls a, quote, reasonably consistent real-time application programming interface that sorts users into four age brackets. And this is not the first time we've seen this. This is a global agenda. We've seen this in foreign countries as well. They all do the same thing, whether it's a traffic light permission system, like they pushed on us with COVID. First, China did it with social credits, and they did it with COVID. Or whether it's this, four age brackets, under 13, 13 to under 16, 16 to under 18, 18 or older. I'm chuckling as I look at this because I'm thinking what we could do is we could name these after different predators in the Epstein files, right? Well, you're in the Trump bracket here, or you're in the Lutnick bracket, or you're in the Jeffrey bracket here. That'd be the least one, I guess. But anyway, it's truly, it's very, very transparent what they're trying to do. They're setting up a police surveillance state. And so when I go back and I say, so what is it? You know, they don't want the kids to get access to pornography. We've had some LGBT advocates out there saying, well, porn is actually good for the LGBT kids. It trains them or whatever. It's like, yeah, I bet it does. And so are they really trying to keep pornography away? That's typically something that Republicans do. It's not something you think about the Democrat LGBT party doing. I think fundamentally, this is about grooming kids for the police surveillance state. You got to get them accustomed to not having freedom with anything. I think that's really what they're after here. It's not there to protect them against some kind of sexual predator, sexual content, or whatever. They're actually pushing that in the schools. This is about getting them accustomed to the police surveillance state. If you stop and think about it, I said this back in the 90s when they were doing lockdowns in schools and they had, you know, metal detectors and all this kind of stuff that they put in the schools. I said, that's training for the police state. This is training for the police state, in my opinion. That's exactly what this is.
To me, it's like with technology. You know, any technology you grow up with is just standard. It's
that's
there,
right.
And you don't
that's
even
right.
think about it. It's
that's
part
right.
of your life.
Mm-hmm.
Any tyranny you grow up with, you barely think about, this is just how it is. This is how it's always been. This is all I've ever known.
Yeah. It's techno-tyranny that they're getting them accustomed to. It's absolutely right. And that's why the government is so adamant on running school systems, folks. Don't turn your kids over to them. Isn't it the worst bill? It isn't the worst bill of its kind, though, says Reclaim the Net. It doesn't require government ID, uploads, or facial scans. Users simply declare their age at setup. That distinguishes it from other laws in Texas and Utah that require commercially reasonable verification, like government-issued ID checks. And again, typically it's going to be in Republican-controlled states like Texas and Utah, where they're going to try to make the case, we've got to do this for the kids. This is simply about grooming for the police surveillance state. And I'm kind of surprised that Reclaim the Net doesn't see it that way. Developers who receive the signal are deemed to have actual knowledge of their user's age range under the law. That change in legal liability is a mechanism that makes the whole system work. Penalties will run up to $2,500 per affected child for negligent violation and $7,500 for intentional ones. Developers now have strong financial incentives to request every age signal available. So what do they do with Linux? I mean, who do you fine Linux for, right? Remains to be seen, but basically they'll just criminalize it. It'll be a black market operating system if it's open source. If it's somebody that's a big tech company in California, oh, well, then you work with us, like the know your customer rules for the banks and so forth. But if not, you are persona non grata, and you may wind up getting the fine yourself. I don't know exactly how that's going to operate. DOJ has briefly abandoned Trump's unconstitutional orders that targeting law firms. Well, the administration's capricious behavior underlies the inherent problem with giving a single person so much power. Well, he was never given this power. He usurped it. Or it was just abandoned and abdicated by the other branches of government, including state governments in terms of doing this. But this goes back to one of the first things that he did. There were these Democrat law firms. Some of them were there working with his Democrat enemies like Soros and so forth. And some of them had been long associated with Hillary Clinton, like Perkins Coie. And some of them had, in one particular case, there was a lawyer who had taken leave of absence from the law firm, and he was working on some of this election stuff in 2020 that Trump didn't like. He was on the opposing side of it. And then he went back to that law firm. And so now the entire law firm, if you remember this at the very beginning, he said, he singled out some of these law firms. And he said, they're not going to have security clearance, which immediately takes a lot of cases off the table for them. And then he went even further. He said, as a matter of fact, they're not even going to be allowed into federal buildings. And so when you do something crazy like that, crazy and vindictive, and you do it to law firms, these are large law firms, of course, they're going to sue you back. And so what we had was this lawsuit that he kicked off. And now what you had was the Department of Justice came back and said, all right, we're going to just let this, we're going to drop this. And within 24 hours, they came back and said, you know, they filed a motion with the court saying, we're just going to drop this case. Within 24 hours, evidently, Donnie got a wind of this or whatever and came back and they then filed a motion to withdraw that, what they had just given the court. And said, no, we're going to continue with it. Again, within 24 hours, they do a complete 180. That's why I said, you know, Trump is always capricious and odious. That's what TACO stands for. And it is truly amazing and how petty this is, how personal it all is. As I said, this, even the things that he does with foreign countries, you've got Spain did not do something that he wanted them to do in support of what he's doing with Iran. So he just decides that he's going to block exports from Spain into the United States, just like that. He's not playing geopolitics. He's playing ego politics. None of this has anything to do with economics. It all has to do with egonomics. And so they changed their name within 24 hours. Again, following morning, they came out and filed a motion to withdraw their previous motion, a voluntary dismissal. As I point out here in Reason, they say the capricious nature of the case of the government reversing, then unreversing its course underlies the inherent problem with imbibing so much power into a single person. We're starting to see the wisdom of the founders yet again, why it was designed this way. They understood human nature, and they did it the way they did it to protect us against people like Donald Trump. After reentering office last year, Trump issued executive orders against more than a dozen law firms favored by Democrats. The orders imposed unworkable restrictions that would have prevented the firms from representing any clients in any federal cases and the types of things that I had mentioned before. And so one guy was not even working for the law firm when he was on a case opposing Trump. Put another way, Trump punished a multinational law firm with over 500 attorneys based on a job that one employee took while he didn't work there. That's the level of vengeance, personal vengeance, that Trump wants to pursue. And so as one person said, who's with the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression, he said, even if you share the president's dim view of big law, and I do, and I've criticized these law firms and what they've done in the past as well, consider that his actions set a dangerous precedent, again, precedent Trump, that will outlast his administration. In the future, perhaps lawyers who represented Republican politicians or who challenged mail-in voting procedures or who defended abortion restrictions will face retributions instead of the Democrats with this, because that's what's going to happen, exactly. And, you know, when we talk about the flock cameras and the license plate readers and all the rest of the surveillance state and tied into the Ring cameras and other things like that, how we have set this up, it turns out that that was a big part of what, how they were able to track these Iranians and do the assassination of Khamenei, hacked traffic cameras. They had they hacked into the network of traffic cameras in Iran, and then they were able to feed all kinds, that kind of information, plus other kinds of information, all this geospatial intelligence, they were able to feed it into an AI program, and it was going to sort out who the interesting people were there. Remember when Michael Hayden said that? He said, we're not interested in everybody. We're interested in interesting people. And now they have the tools to go through this mountain of data and find the people that they want to attack. First of all, identify them by their politics. I'm truly amazed when I go to X and I click, you know, there's a thing when you go over somebody's name, you can do a summary of somebody's profile. I was surprised at their summary of me. I thought it was pretty spot on. And certainly something that would stick out to the powers that be is something that they would want to be interested in. But that's where we all are right now. And that's what artificial intelligence is about. And that's why the Trump administration is so adamant that they want to, and it was a bipartisan thing, actually, in that big, beautiful bill or whatever, stop any restrictions or legislation controlling artificial intelligence for a decade. And you know what will happen in a decade. They will extend it or they'll make it even worse. So the traffic cameras on the streets of Tehran provided a real-time view of the targets. It was hacked years ago. The cameras allowed Israel to map the city in detail, establish patterns of movement, and build an intricate, complex picture of what was happening inside an enemy capital. And as I've said over and over again, it's geospatial intelligence. That has been the fastest growing part of the intelligence community going back to the late 1990s. And it's where James Clapper grew up. And they would have, before the lockdown, they would have conventions on an annual basis where they have thousands of people go to these geospatial intelligence conventions. And part of it is some other kind of AI they would talk about. Even before they had artificial intelligence, they were doing anticipatory intelligence to predict where people are going to go. And all of this was to sort through and find interesting people, people who you didn't like their politics or you didn't like their religion. The cameras are only one part of a much more complex system, some of whose details were first reported by the Financial Times, that allowed Israel to build one of what is Israeli source familiar with the matter called an AI-powered target production machine that's capable of processing massive amounts of data. Now, they're not saying this in the article, but we can read through the lines. We know that that's basically what Palantir does. Palantir, that is their bread and butter. And we also know because it's back and forth between Pentagon Pete and Anthropic that has the Claude AI. We know that Palantir was using Claude AI for their stuff as well. So they're both involved in this. It went visual, visual intelligence, human intelligence, signals intelligence, intercepted communications, satellite imagery, and more. And so the visual intelligence was there with these traffic cameras, right? Then they had some people on the ground. Then they had signals that they would intercept, as well as satellite images. They would feed all of this stuff into artificial intelligence, and it would sort through this massive mountain of data, which is what it is excellent at doing. And so the massive quantity of information that would go in, and they would draw out the targets, the people that they wanted to target. It has added to what Israel has reportedly shown to be a longstanding penetration of Iran's inner circles, which has enabled it to assassinate scores of Iran's top nuclear scientists and officials over the years, and to steal the country's nuclear archive, and to kill Hamas's political leaders in Tehran. The system has proven itself before, as a matter of fact. Although the U.S. and Iran were engaged in negotiations over Tehran's nuclear program, Netanyahu believed and felt that there was never going to be enough common ground to reach a deal. And of course, you know, we know that because we have seen the clips of him talking for over 30 years about how, well, any day now they're going to have nuclear weapons. So there's absolutely no way that Netanyahu was involved in any good faith negotiations with this. So he met with Trump at the White House February 11th. The two of them had a private meeting for nearly 3 hours. They only released a single photo. So they were pretty busy. Yeah, they were. This is not a photo session. The talk was not about ongoing Iranian negotiations. Instead, they were drawing up plans for a joint attack. Well before they got into these negotiations. The negotiations were just treachery. Think about that. And think about what these people are set up to do. The Electronic Freedom Foundation is filing a brief to shut down unconstitutional geofence searches. And again, this is the geofence searches. We saw a little bit of that with January the 6th, but they're doing it over and over again. They're setting up the surveillance states of America. We should be very concerned about geospatial intelligence, about geofencing. The brief argues that geofence warrants, which compel companies to provide information on every electronic device in a given area during a given time period, are a digital version of the exploratory rummaging that the drafters of the Fourth Amendment specifically intended to prevent by requiring a search warrant. Unlike typical warrants, geofence warrants do not name a suspect or even target a specific individual or device. Instead, police cast a digital dragnet, demanding location data on every device in a geographic area during a certain time period, regardless of whether the device owner has any connection to the crime at all under investigation. And we've talked about places where this has really led to some horrific false identification and consequences for people who are caught up in this dragnet simply because they were in an area. Now, the Supreme Court agreed to hear Chatry versus United States, in which a 2019 geofence warrant compelled Google to search the accounts of all of its hundreds of millions of users to see if any of them was within a radius that police drew around a Northern Virginia crime scene. This area amounted to several football fields in size, and it encompassed numerous homes, businesses, and even a church. In an ancient brief that was, in an amicus brief that was filed Monday, they argued that allowing this kind of sweeping power to go unchecked is inconsistent with the freedoms of a democratic society. Of course it is. This is not a traditional police work, but rather the leveraging of new and powerful technology to claim a novel and formidable power over its people. By their very nature, the geofence searches turn innocent bystanders into suspects and leverages even purportedly limited searches into larger dragnets, causing intrusions at a scale far beyond those held constitutional in the physical world. Yeah, EFF has repeatedly argued that these high-tech efforts to pull suspects out of thin air cannot be constitutional even with a warrant. Geofence searches are just the kind of impermissible general warrants that the framers of the Constitution so reviled. And that's where we are here, folks. These people will do anything and everything to set up a police surveillance state. They're going to ban operating systems. They want to ban 3D printers. And not just because of the ghost gun stuff. They always come up with some kind of a rationale and some kind of a scary label for something. DG8, thank you very much for the tip. It says, David, the sad part about this California tyrannical action is that it's plain to see that we have one giant uniparty. People can't and won't see it. That's right. The left-right bogus paradigm is undeniable. David, they will never go after the porn industry. Do you realize the top two funders of AIPAC is the porn industry. MindGeek is owned by a rabbi. That's number one. OnlyFans is number two, also owned by a rabbi. And then, of course, you've got Scumly Boteach, who is a rabbi who sells sex toys. And Alex has him on a lot. Didn't have him on when I was there, but he's become a real fan of that kind of stuff, I guess. But, yeah, that's the bottom line is that it's not about that. It's not about protecting the children. The Republicans are trying to make that case. And you need to realize that that's really not what the Republicans are addressing either. They're also on board with this other thing because there's a lot of different ways that they could address that, and it's really a parental issue. There's a lot of different ways they could address that other than ending anonymity on the web. That is their goal. That is the goal of the World Economic Forum. Yeah, you know, I always think about it when we talk about the Uniparty and what you said there about people can't and won't see it. I've had people leave stuff on comments about the show or other things. Yeah, David is just, he hates everybody. It's like, I don't hate everybody. I hate what the Uniparty is doing. And I'm trying to tell you that it's, you know, the Republican Party is not your savior. The Democrat Party is not your savior. It's both of them that are doing this. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Making sense common again. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
Elvis.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles.
And the sweet sounds of Motown. Find them on the Oldies channel at APSradio.com.
Well, what we were just talking about in terms of people always thinking that, you know, there's this getting pushed into this false dichotomy. Well, it's either this or that, and this is better than that, so I'm going to support this or whatever, when they both might be evil. A good example of this, I think, is what's going on right now between Anthropic and their large language model that they call Claude, and what is happening with OpenAI and their large language model, ChatGPT, and what's going on with the Pentagon. And this is escalated over the last week. It was not even a week since the Pentagon Pete and Trump said, oh, they're woke, I want them out of here. And I don't really know the background of this CEO or Anthropic that much. His name is Dario Amodei, I guess. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. I haven't looked it up. Anyway, he's the one who is standing firm on these red lines that he said. And the way I see this happening is, to me, this is one of the few things that people can do right now. I think why this has gotten so large. One of the few things that a lot of people can do, they're frustrated with this war. They don't want to see this happening. What do you do to stop it? Well, one of the things they can do is identify somebody who's part of this military-industrial complex and say, we don't want to have anything to do with that. So they're dropping OpenAI and ChatGPT like a hot potato with this. So as part of this argument going back and forth, the CEO, Dario Amodei, said it's about the principle of standing up for what's right. And he may be sticking to this. This may be something that is genuine. I don't know yet. They did found this company, they said, because they were concerned about the direction. I think it was maybe OpenAI was going. They were concerned about the direction it was going. So they started this company and said, we're going to have some, we're going to put out some principles here, things that we will not do. We will not become part of mass surveillance. So we won't allow this to be used for autonomous killing machines. He said, it feels very punitive what is being done to us by the Trump administration and inappropriate, given the amount that we have done for U.S. national security. That's why I say, you know, when you look at this, it was really, these are the guys that were doing the targeting and all the rest of the stuff along with Palantir. So I really kind of wonder where they are on these red lines. But even more troubling is we absolutely do know where the Pentagon is. We absolutely do know where Pentagon Pete is and where Trump is. They want to have mass surveillance by artificial intelligence. And it's not just this. We could see it before what they're pushing it. The very first day that Trump is there, he pushes that mRNA poison that he's so proud of in conjunction with artificial intelligence. And then he, last summer, as I just said, you know, we're going to give immunity to artificial intelligence. You can't have any local or state laws that are going to shut down. Well, we'll see about that. People should take the same approach that Trump does and say, well, you know, we'll see about that, because the Constitution is on our side. The 10th Amendment makes it clear that the states and the people are not dictated to by the federal government. We're the ones who created the federal government. States created the federal government. The people created the federal government according to the document that they swear to uphold. And so hold them to that and say, you are a creature of the states and of we the people, and you don't get to tell us what we can and cannot do. We have these two red lines, said Amodei. We had them from day one, and we're still advocating for those red lines, and we're not going to move away from them. Those red lines, well, they're red lines for the Pentagon as well. Pentagon says if you don't do mass surveillance of Americans, we're going to put you out of business. And if you don't help us with our autonomous killing machines, we're going to put you out of business. So it doesn't show the judgment that a human soldier would show, said Amodei, about AI in terms of automated killing machines. Friendly fire or shooting a civilian or just the wrong kind of thing, he said. Yeah, but see, the thing is, War Pete doesn't really care about that, does he? He doesn't care about machine gunning people who have been shipwrecked. Shipwrecked why? Because of an unjust war that you started? These are red lines that the Trump administration has ignored for quite some time. They don't care what the Geneva Convention says. They don't care what the Pentagon rules say. They don't care what basic human decency and rules of morality say either. So Amadei says, we don't want to sell something that we don't think is reliable. And we don't want to sell something that could get our own people killed or that could get innocent people killed. And so as a result of that, they are getting punished by Trump and Pete. They want to put them out of business. They want to say anybody that uses their product, you can't have anything to do with the federal government. And so the federal government now basically, that's the way that Biden was able to push out these mandates, because virtually every company now, except for small mom and pop businesses, every company, if they're of any size, they're doing business with the federal government. It's one of the most lucrative businesses that you can have because they don't really care in terms of costs. So it's a rich customer that you want to have. And if they're not going to be your customer because you are doing business with Anthropic, then it's much, much bigger than this small, relatively small contract they have of $200 million. So Amadei says Anthropic plans to take legal action. He said, all we've seen so far is tweets from the president and from Secretary Hegseth. He said Anthropic remains at the negotiating table, hoping to talk. Asked what he might say to Trump, Amadei said, we are patriotic Americans. Everything that we have done has been for the sake of this country, for sake of supporting U.S. national security. We believe in defeating our autocratic adversaries. We believe in defending America. The red lines we have drawn, we drew because we believe that crossing those red lines is contrary to American values. Disagreeing with the government is the most American thing in the world, and we are patriots. And everything we have done here, we have stood up for the values of this country, he said. Well, Sam Altman immediately ingratiated himself in with the Pentagon to take their place. And the blowback has been pretty significant in terms of people downloading the large language models or uninstalling the large language models on their devices. Anthropic's Claude jumped to number one in the App Store as users dropped ChatGPT over what Sam Altman is doing. It's not every day that an AI app leapfrogs to number one in the App Store, especially when it's overtaking the category's biggest name, ChatGPT. But that's exactly what happened when Anthropic's Claude climbed to the top of Apple's rankings, edging out ChatGPT. And so the response of damage control from Sam Altman is to come out and brag, oh, we're going to have red lines too. Yeah, right. OpenAI is amending the agreement to include language noting that we only do things that are consistent with applicable laws. Well, be careful, because that Hegseth doesn't like that. If you say, don't do illegal orders, he's going to come after you. This guy just wants to kill. He wants to kill the rule of law, first and foremost. And so he says, also we will say that our AI models shall not be intentionally used for domestic surveillance of U.S. persons and nationals. Notice that he put in there intentionally. Do you remember when James Clapper was asked by Ron Wyden? He said, are you spying on Americans without a search warrant? Well, Senator, not intentionally. That lying guy. That's what Sam Altman is doing. Is, well, not intentionally. We're not doing it intentionally. No, it's intentional. He got in there. So you got a huge number of people not only getting Claude, but they are uninstalling ChatGPT at a very, very rapid rate. Listen to this. He went into full damage control over the weekend because they signed this new agreement with the Pentagon to do what an ethical company would not do. He says, I'll do it. So people realize that he's an opportunist and he'll do whatever it takes. And so, of course, he's going to do mass surveillance for the Pentagon. So they have uninstall rates of OpenAI's ChatGPT spiked at 295% day over day. So the uninstall rate went up by 300%. Meanwhile, their competition that said we're not going to spy on Americans, their competition shot up to number one in terms of downloaded apps. So it's pretty clear what's happening here. People are uninstalling ChatGPT and installing OpenAI. And I think part of that is a pushback against this unpopular war. One of the few things, I guess, that people can do. But they may also be worried about the Pentagon and the Machiavellian industrial complex. Now Altman is continuing his apology tour, conceding in a lengthy tweet on Monday that he shouldn't have rushed in to the Defense Department deal. He claimed that OpenAI would be altering the terms of the deal after the fact. And again, they're going to insert that word intentionally. What a deceptive guy. Anyway, he's out there trying to do damage control. I think that is an interesting fallout of all of this stuff. And meanwhile, let's look at the egonomics of war. Trump is offering, as I said earlier, he's offering to insure and to provide the tankers as well as to provide military escorts for them as they go around and through the Strait of Hormuz. So Trump said the U.S. will immediately offer political risk insurance and guarantees. Maybe we could all get the federal government to write us an insurance policy on nuclear war. How about that? That's excluded from most of these insurance policies. Maybe we could get the kind of insurance policies that Lucky Lutnick and what's the other guy's name that had Building 7? Was it? I can't remember his name. Anyway, they named a little park after him that's there. He's still alive, actually. And Sheldon something, was it? Anyway, the two of them taking out big insurance policies. Maybe we could get them to take out some insurance policies on this stuff as well. You and I will be the underwriters on this stuff, of course. Just put it on the bill. It's only $40 trillion. Political risk insurance and guarantees for energy tankers and other ships in the Gulf region. And that the Navy will escort tankers through the Strait of Hormuz if needed. Yeah, that won't be a dangerous and vulnerable thing for them to do, will it? So he created this policy and announced it on Truth Social. It's an amazing, I guess, you know, Jefferson, Madison, Franklin, none of these guys ever really envisioned that you'd have an autocrat single-handedly making all these decisions and putting them out on some kind of a thing called social media, right? Publishing it there. If necessary, the U.S. Navy will begin escorting tankers through the Strait of Hormuz as soon as possible, he said. No matter what, the U.S. will ensure the free flow of energy to the world, all uppercase, right? Can he even guarantee that? Yeah, just like with the budget deficit and all the rest of the stuff, Trump is, as usual, he's writing checks that he can't cash. This is, I guess, is how you bankrupt a casino. You don't really know what the odds are with anything that you're doing. TPNH and company said in a note earlier Tuesday that skyrocketing shipping at new all-time highs and insurance rates are a key reason why traffic through the Strait of Hormuz has largely ground to a halt. The conflict is pushing up crude oil and other energy commodity prices, already filtering down to U.S. gasoline pumps. The nationwide average price for regular gasoline is $3.11 per gallon, 11-cent increase over yesterday, per the AAA. Crude retreated back slightly over $80 per barrel Tuesday afternoon after hitting $85 for the first time since 2024 earlier in the day. Meanwhile, we have tankers who are burning from the Strait of Hormuz to the Mediterranean Sea and a spillover of war risks. The Times of Malta reports that the Russian-flagged LNG tanker, Arctic Metagaz, Metagaz, that's like gas, right? But it's an LNG tanker. Wouldn't want to be on an LNG tanker when a drone hits it, would you? it might not be an Arctic traveler anymore. It might be a little bit warm, I think. Get tropical.
Very warm, very fast.
So identified as part of Russia's shadow fleet, it suffered an explosion while transiting the Mediterranean Sea between Malta and Libya. Multiple sources told a local paper that they experienced a series of explosions and that it was a cause of deflagration. Indications that there was a huge explosion on board. They said the explosion was due to a drone attack. In a separate report, Reuters also says the LNG tanker may have been hit by a drone. The world is seemingly at war with the U.S.-Iran conflict choking the critical maritime Strait of Hormuz. Trump announced that the U.S. government will provide insurance for, quote, all maritime trade, unquote, through the U.S. Development Finance Corporation, and will provide naval escorts in the Strait of Hormuz to ensure the waterways remain open. This will be a huge expense, folks. But when you look at the alternative, it's almost like this is an afterthought for him, even. But when you look at the amount of traffic that goes through there, as I said before, compare 20% of the world's oil going through the Strait of Hormuz. Compare that to the trivial OPEC embargo. By comparison, it was trivial. It had humongous effects globally, especially here in America. But this has potential to be much, much bigger. So Hormuz is paralyzed. Another tanker has been hit. And we have a floating parking lot of ships. Again, these tankers are out in the open water for defense. And what does that tell you when you're going to send in the Navy into this narrow area to navigate? It's going to be raising the risk significantly to the naval ships. 2 days ago, the Iranian regime had 11 ships in the Gulf of Oman, bragged U.S. Central Command. Today, they have zero. The Iranian regime has harassed and attacked, and we've taken away their navy. But they don't need to have a navy to harass and attack these tankers. They have missiles. They have drones. And again, when you look at the math, U.S.-made Patriot air defense missiles have been largely successful in stopping the Iranian Shaheds and other ballistic missiles with interception rates of over 90%. However, you're using $4 million missiles to destroy $20,000 drones. That's a problem. You know, we've got all this money. We've got a wealthy country that they're now burning that up. You know, they're just lighting their cigars with $1,000 bills, basically, and creating massive amounts of debt, a gigantic military budget. We are giving money and equipment to all these other countries so they can have wars. And we are using, when we talk about asymmetric warfare, there's an economic aspect of that as well. You use a $4 million missile to take down a $20,000 drone. And then you're using these anti-ballistic missile systems that require three missiles, three anti-missile missiles for each missile that you take down. They are expensive. They're more complicated to make. We've got ourselves on the wrong side of the equation here, don't you think? What's really going on with the Pentagon planners? This is an empire that is rotten and ready to collapse, financially as well as strategically. What's the strategy here? You know, what's the plan? They don't have one. So the Western military planners, quote unquote, yeah. The cheap weapons can chew up resources meant for much more complex threats. Yeah, they really haven't planned this thing through. Since the start of the war, the U.S. has intercepted hundreds of ballistic missiles targeting U.S. forces, our partners, and regional stability. The intercepts are a success. They prevent the missiles from striking their targets, but they also come at the cost of pricey, high-tech interceptors that are in very short supply. The length of the conflict is a factor in affecting how many interceptors will be needed, and it's currently unclear how long that'll last. You know, as they say, everybody's got a plan until you get punched in the face, and then that all goes out the window. But these guys, before they even got punched in the face, didn't have a plan. They didn't have a way. They didn't have enough ammunition and allies to pull this thing off, really. I mean, I'm looking at this and it doesn't make any sense. Anyway, Trump has referred to this as a multi-week war, although the president said Monday that we're already substantially ahead of our time projections. Maybe they're ahead of their consumption of these missiles. Now, one of the things they say in terms of how this stuff matches up, I already talked about the production rates, 100 missiles per month versus 6 to 7 interceptors, but you need 2 or 3 interceptors per missile. So they really need to keep this equal, they need to be producing about 200 or 300 interceptors per month, which they're not doing. But Iran is estimated by Israel to have 2,500 ballistic missiles already. Have we got 7,500 of these interceptors in storage, or maybe more, because we're going to be running that down at a much, much faster rate? And so production simply cannot keep pace with demand. Every theater from Europe to Indo-Pacific and the Middle East has an acute need of more missile defense launchers, interceptors, and the U.S. is simply consuming them faster than it can replace them. And we are consuming everything in this country faster than it can be replaced. So, again, it's the 3-to-1 ratio that is really important about this. The U.S. fired about 150 THAAD interceptors just last June to defend Israel during a 12-day war against Iran. Those weapons are the highest-end ground-based missile defense system in the American inventory. That's what Trump was saying. Well, we're really good in terms of low and the mid-high stuff. We just don't have the high-end stuff. Well, that's the stuff that they were actually using the most. Each interceptor cost about $15 million, but only a few dozen were purchased last year. That's under the Trump administration. They were not purchasing these missiles. So they've been planning to do this, but they didn't want to buy the missiles that they were going to need to defend themselves. Again, we're being led by a ship of fools. It's just crazy. The cost of firing hundreds of them, as well as other types of interceptors, is enormous. In April of 2024, Bloomberg reported that it probably cost Israel, as well as the American, British, French, and Jordanian air forces, about $1.1 billion to foil missile and drone attacks from Iran. And that was just for a few hours of work. This is going to be much larger. The U.S. and Israeli militaries will try to reduce the number of missiles and launchers that Iran had available, and will try to kill top commanders to prevent their use. They have thousands of missiles and drones. This is now an all-out war for their survival. But not for us, evidently, right? So Trump is angry at Spain, vows to cut off all trade with them. Very, very uncooperative over the base refusal for Iran attacks, he says. Again, more tariff tantrums, more ego politics, not geopolitics. Declaring that he was going to cut off all trade with Spain and denouncing Prime Minister Keir Starmer as no Winston Churchill. Trump became visibly angry during a sit-down with German Chancellor Fred Merz. He said, they're going to have some explaining to do, right, Lucy? Trump became visibly angry during a sit-down. He also had harsh words for Starmer, showing a strain in the relationship with the U.K. This is not Winston Churchill that we're dealing with, he said. This government does not believe in regime change from the skies, however, said Keir Starmer. And that is making him more popular, just like Claude. So Claude and Keir, Trump is so incredibly unpopular, this war is so incredibly unpopular, that anybody that pushes back against it is going to be to their advantage. Marky Mark, thank you for the tip. He says, we now have the APKWS, a drone-killing missile that costs about $30,000 each. Well, the British have been demonstrating a directed energy weapon that is really, really cheap. That would flip the advantage. That would put an end to the production issues if they deploy that. And it would also put an end to this asymmetric financial warfare that we're talking about as well. Things are going to change very, very rapidly. They always do during war. And the key issue, though, is not really about the about that. It gives us a glimpse into the preparation and forethought that went into this. They have been thinking about this and wanting to do this, but they haven't really laid the groundwork to accomplish it. They're going to have to improvise on the way. It wasn't sufficient planning. That's the key issue I think we can take away from this. And then, of course, there's also the issue of whether it is morally justified to start wars, which is what we're doing. So Trump has pushed back on Megyn Kelly, Tucker Carlson, saying again, MAGA is Trump. I am MAGA. They are not MAGA. He said, MAGA wants to see our country thrive and be safe. MAGA loves what I'm doing, every aspect of it. Talking about Megyn Kelly, said she was critical of me for years and I didn't lose. I won all three times by a lot, suggesting, as he had previously, that he would have a 2021-2020 reelection if it had not been rigged. He said, Megyn was opposed to me for years when I ran the first time and nothing stopped me. So, you know, some people are against and they always come back. She came all the way back. But now I guess she maybe doesn't like the idea of this war, but I do because I have to keep nuclear weapons out of the hands of the Iranians. Trump said that Carlson can say whatever he wants. It has no impact on me. Well, all I can say is that, I never had any interaction with Tucker Carlson personally. I did with Megyn Kelly when she went to InfoWars, and I thought she was the essence of what you typically see with these celebrity model presenters. She hadn't a clue as to what was going on about anything. She'd never even heard of, and certainly didn't even care when I explained it to her, what civil asset forfeiture was. And she sat us down and interviewed us individually when she was doing the hit piece on Alex. And she asked me some questions about where I was and stuff. And I said, well, I certainly don't like Trump. And I gave that as the very first thing that came to mind, because this was before 2020. And she had never just, blank slate, never heard of, what's civil asset forfeiture? It's like, you're a lawyer. I think she's got a law degree. And she didn't know that. Well, in terms of the cluster munitions that were there, as I pointed out, people showing the incoming missiles that were there, and evidently this is a real video of what's happening, what happened in Jerusalem with an attack, this particular one right here. Person wrote here, this is from Richard Rick WE123. Israeli experts are now sounding the alarm. Iranian cluster missiles can split into as many as 80 sub-missiles, hitting multiple targets simultaneously. They're calling it an unprecedented weapon. The biggest question is, how did Iran get its hands on such technology in a country where scientists are constantly being assassinated? It's hard to ignore the possibility that China and Russia handed this deadly know-how straight to Tehran. Well, we talked about before this happened, we talked about their ship-killing missile that was supersonic that China had. Travels right over the surface of the water at supersonic sounds and then does a zigzagging approach just before it hits the target. They had been working since Trump attacked them last summer. They had been working to secure those from China. Not clear whether or not they got those before Trump attacked. Again, the timing of the attack was dictated by Netanyahu, not about readiness. And so it's really not clear whether they have those yet or whether they will acquire them. We will have to wait and see what happens with it. We're going to take a quick break, folks. We'll be right back.
Listening to the David Knight Show.
Whether you're feeling like the blues or bluegrass, APS Radio has you covered. Check out a wide variety of channels on our app at APSradio.com.
Well, one of the dumbest and most dishonest of the Trump regime was taking incoming fire yesterday and taking it from her own side. It was friendly fire. Supposedly, it's coming. Some of the hardest questions came from Republicans of Kristi Noem. She did not retract calling U.S. citizens that were killed by the ICE agents. She called them domestic terrorists. She didn't, would not take that back. They came after her for a number of things. And she, like Trump, doesn't shy away from telling people bull-faced lies for which video exists. Dick Durbin pressed her on why Renee Good and Alex Preddy were falsely labeled as domestic terrorists following their killing. She didn't take back the statements about them, but she said that the ICE officers face a, quote, dangerous environment, unquote, and threats. When asked what information she got to deem them as domestic terrorists, she said her agency relied on information provided by agents on the ground. And they came after her for a number of issues. And by the way, you know, the spokesperson who was always making these absurd statements as well, it turns out that her family is involved in a little bit of corruption, and that was also exposed in these hearings.
Russia must find that oil.
Oh, that's the wrong one. Sorry.
A U.S. government website that says that contract for $143 million was a no-bid contract. Public documentation says the contract of $143 million went to the Safe America company, created 11 days before they got an award. That company then subcontracted with the strategy group, and you are familiar with many of the principals in the strategy group, correct?
I know one of them.
Mr. Yoho.
Yes.
And let me show you a photograph. That's Yoho. Yoho standing next to you, correct?
Yes.
Now, Mr. Yoho is also the husband of your former spokesperson. Is that correct?
Yeah, correct. She was telling one lie after the other.
Yes.
Trisha McLaughlin.
So your former assistant secretary and her husband are the ones that got the subcontract from Safe America, or from Safe America. That's what the record shows. Any dispute about that?
No, except there was no politicals, myself or anyone else besides career employees who were a part of that process, except putting out those contracts and choosing
generous,
those vendors.
But it was just choosing those vendors. I mean, this is a company that was put together 11 days before you awarded the contract, and it happens to be run by the husband of the woman who is your chief liar and spokesperson who is there. Don't tell me they don't pay them well for lying. Stuff. But of course, there are other things as well. You had one of the guys hold up. There was on a lot of media, they're showing the Mile High Club. She's got this luxury jet that she flies around with. And of course, all of the talk about her and Corey Lewandowski, they've got a massive bed in this this luxury jet. Oh, well, we're going to be fixing it up. You know, it's a fixer-upper. And then you've got Tom Tillis. He says, I'm going to get answers from her. He wants her out of there. Tom Tillis is a Republican congressman from North Carolina. I never liked Tom Tillis because of his toll road taxes that he put in. But Tom Tillis is after Kristi Noem. He says he's going to basically shut down the Senate. And, of course, according to the rules, one senator can do that. You know, they can refuse to allow them to move forward. He's going to block various committees and everything if he doesn't get that. And he's not the only Republican that was after her either. You had Senator Kennedy from Louisiana was coming after her with the whoppers that she was telling one after the other. It was an interesting thing to see. He scolded her. He said, terribly awkward. You spent $220 million on DHS ads that featured you in this vanity project. And that's what Kennedy was saying. Well, that's it for today. Thank you for joining us.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.